You're listening to Inward with Rabbi Joey Rosenfeld on the Sheffa Podcast Network. Join Rabbi Joey as he guides us through the world and major works of Kabbalah, Hasidic masters, and Jewish philosophy, shedding light on the inner life of the soul.
Okay, so Be'ezras Hashem, just a quick thought in terms of processing through a particular element that litters the road of tshuva, that no matter how much a person can uncover the positive points within themselves, no matter how much a person can come to accept themselves based on where they find themselves, Ba'asher Hu Sham, to let go and untether themselves from all of those thick notions and ideas and shame-induced perspectives of self, no matter how much we affirm and affirm and affirm our position and validate where we find ourselves and ennoble our position and value the actions that we do, there still ultimately remains a kol d'mamadaka. There still remains a voice. Now, that voice can be blamed on previous generations. That voice can be blamed on systems, microsystems, macrosystems that have imposed certain thought constructs upon me. But in the end of the day, as we learn out from the hero of tshuva, we learn from the hero of tshuva, Rav Elazar ben Dudayev, the deep secret of Ein Hadavar Taloi Elabi. The most frightening concept associated with tshuva is that Elazar ben Dudayev, an addict of every form of addiction, spiritual, physical, emotional, each and every one of us, he finds himself searching for that pleasure, finds himself searching for that relief that promises to relieve him of this worldly experience, and ultimately comes to find the futility of it all, the airness of it all, the emptiness of it all, the hevel havalim of it all. And at that point, in the moment of being chozer b'tshuva, so he looks to the mountains. He looks to the mountains and asks, what should I do now? And the mountains answer, I can't answer you. I don't have an answer for you. He looks to the sun and the moon and he says, what should I do now? And the sun and the moon says, we can't answer you. Until he comes to that deep recognition of Ein Hadavar Talui Ela Bi. The matter is dependent singularly upon me. There is nothing in this world that can cause me to do tshuva in a healthy way other than myself. The Ben Ish Chai, in a profoundly, nearly miraculous teaching that is so aligned with theories of therapy and psychoanalysis, Lahavdil, ultimately says as follows. He says that at this stage of tshuva, at this stage of the overwhelming recognition that I've seen myself one way, and if I continue to see myself that way and I continue to treat myself that way, I am going to go down a particular path which is going to lead to despondency and hopelessness. And there is a path open in front of me that needs to become my new path. Hayiti baderech v'hetchalti l'saper sipurim, as Rabbi Nachman says, v'kol mi sheshomeo oso haya lohem hir hatshuva. I was on the path and I began to tell narratives, and anybody who heard these stories had an awakening of tshuva. The awakening of tshuva is the opening up of a path that stands in front of the person that redirects them from the path that they were walking on beforehand. In that moment, what a person experiences, Rav Elazar ben Dudayev comes to a place of realizing that, oh my God, my life has been a lie in all matters of lies. So first and foremost, what he does is he places his head between his feet. He kind of bends down in a position of hopelessness, entering into what we refer to as a fetal position. But what the Ben Ish Chai points out is that there is a certain psychological mechanism here, that what he was doing was he was returning to a state of in utero, where Chazal describes the child in utero as being plus clean and plus three folded over three, that the upper part of our body is folded over the lower part of our body, that our intellectual and emotional processes are now reverting back to the instinctual processes that are there with us from birth. So first and foremost, there's a return psychologically to the womb where I can begin to reorient myself. Then when a person begins the act of tshuva, so we realize that a lot of the hangups, a lot of the mis construed notions, a lot of the shame, a lot of the guilt, a lot of the cognitive distortions that we carry, a lot of the baggage that we carry is not our own. It's our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our friends, the circular systems that we operate within. Most people do it undeliberately, perhaps some deliberately, God forbid. But nevertheless, our impact and our stuckness and the things that we carry are very rarely our own. And so the natural inclination of the self when it comes in contact with this harrowing reality that I need to change, something needs to change right now, after going back to that innocent space of being in the womb where I believe in my pureness and my capacity to do good, the next thing is to look at the mountains like Elazar ben Dudayev. The Ben Ish Chai says, what are the mountains? Hahoyrim, they're the parents. Most people, when they encounter a discrepancy in their life that they can't move beyond, the first inclination is to place the blame or find the burden of blame within the previous generations, the influence that my parents had on me, my great-grandparents, my grandparents, all of the interconnecting kind of systems that go into the very delicate, delicate process of the formation of the human being. And the mountains say, I'm sorry, the Hoirim can't answer this for you. Yes, there's a responsibility at the heart of any generation as with regards to what happens afterwards with the next generations and their thought patterns. But nevertheless, they didn't do it deliberately because their model of thinking was also imposed on them by previous generations. So the mountains say, don't come to me. Then when we realize that we cannot place the blame or we cannot place the burden of change by our family, by those who have come before us, so then we look to the sun and the moon. The sun and the moon are the celestial forces. So if it's not going to be the nurture that we received from our parents, then perhaps it's going to be the nature in the way that we were created, how I function, my chemical composition, my likes and my dislikes, the things that orient who I am as an individual. Hashem, the cards are stacked against me. I was born under a certain celestial condition. I was born with a certain built-in deficiency. And the sun and the moon also say, nope, sorry, you cannot place the blame of your responsibility or the burden of your responsibility in tshuva on anything other than yourself, because in spite of the fact that the celestial conditionings and the nature of the individual might leave us with a particular handicap, that handicap becomes the territory in which I function, but my capacity towards bechira and free choice within that capacity in which I function will always remain something that is mine and mine singularly. And at that point, Rav Elazar ben Dudayev comes to the recognition that ein hadavar talui elabi, the matter is not dependent upon anybody but myself, and if I'm going to pull myself and extricate myself out of the stuckness that I find myself in, then ultimately it is going to be through my own volitional activity. I am going to become myself by becoming myself. I am the one who has to self-express myself, and the self-instantiation and intensification has to emerge specifically from within my own most choice. And that leads us to the position that we find ourselves in. No matter how much Torah I can hear or learn from the tzaddikim about the reorientation of what tshuva looks like, I still cannot break free from the narratives that bind me down to this notion that I am unfixable and I am broken and I am unworthy and I am this and I am that. And each person knows what their narrative is. And Mamela, that's what I want to try and talk about today. What happens when a person comes in contact with these preventions of the mind that are nothing but the figments of our own imaginations and our ruminations and our cognitive distortions and the assumptions that we've made about ourselves that continuously beat us down and prevent us from believing in our capacity to move forward every step in our lives. And so in the bracha of Ulam Malshinim, in Shemona Esrei, we say Ulam Malshinim al tihi tikva, v'chala risha'a kerega to'aved, that we ask that these Malshinim, these individuals who come along to speak negatively against us, to raise claims against us that will have a negative impact on us in a real way, in spite of the fact that the claims that they raise might not be true. This group of Malshinim, who singularly seek out to destroy the hope of an individual moving forward. Now, historically speaking, the Malshinim are a very clear and direct identity of people who engaged with Klal Yisrael. But when we look at the Arizal, we see that the bracha of Ulam Malshinim, the prayer that we have to free ourselves from those negative influences, those voices that come to beat me down, those voices that come to speak down to me, that keep me stuck in the holding pattern of my own instability and dysfunction. Ultimately, the Arizal says that in order to say this bracha properly, a person has to draw down a light from the Or of Keser. And as we know, Kesser is the loftiest level. Kesser is that place of the Hippoch. Kesser is that place where everything is reverted from what we thought it was to something new. It's the Pele Elyon, but we're talking about the nuclear level of accessing the Rabbeinu Shleilim's light. And so why is it that this Ulam Moshinim, if we're talking about an identifiable group of enemies, so why the need to reach so far up into the deep territories of Kesser in order to have these Malshinim move away? We can just ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to move the Malshinim away. But when we understand what the Malshinim truly are, then we can understand why we need to draw upon such a lofty spiritual level of Kesser. The Slonim or Tzadikim point out that what are these Malshinim? Who are these Malshinim who are out there to get us, to tell us that we can't fix ourselves, to tell us that we're broken, to tell us that we're stuck, to tell us that we can't move forward? It's no one but ourselves. Ula Malshinim al tihi tikva, what we're davening to the Rabbeinu Shleilim is, Rabbeinu Shleilim, every ounce of myself that refuses to believe in my capacity to change, every ounce of myself that remains steadfast in the memory of my failures and the falls and the brokenness and all of its various ugliness, any aspect of myself that continues to doubt my capacity to actually do the next right thing, that doubts my authenticity, any emotion, any part in me that consistently is seeking to diminish and belittle my spiritual capacity, that sees it through eyes of leitzanus or ignoring it and making fun of it and not taking our spiritual connectivity to the Rabbeinu Shleilim seriously, any part of me that continues to say, who are you that thinks you can be the crown of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Who are you that thinks that you could bring Mashiach? Every voice that emerges in our own minds, that is us. Those are the Malshinim. We are the Malshinim. We are the ones who are Malshin on ourselves. We are the ones who bespeak and create these narratives of weakness and self-perpetuating inabilities, that we convince ourselves that we are incapable of change and that we are undeserving of change, in spite of the fact that nobody other than ourselves has been more capable of change or more deserving of change. And so now we can begin to understand why we have to draw down from a light of Kesser in order to overcome these Malshinim, because it's one thing to deal with enemies that are other people. That's one thing. And very often those people don't really exist in our lives other than by way of imagination. But what's much more difficult is to save myself from myself, to realize that ain't nobody messing with me but me, and that it's my mind that takes me away from the ability to do tshuva, and that it's my mind that is incapable of believing in the radical power of tshuva, and it's specifically my mind that stands in the gap between who I am right now and who I feel that I can be. And so when Elazar ben Dedayev comes to the recognition that Eina Davar Talei Ela Bi, and when the Yid comes to the recognition that I am the one who belittles my capacity to grow, and therefore I need to desire and demand from the Rabbeinu Shleilim, help me from myself, help me save myself from myself, free me from these imagined enemies that are chasing me, because ultimately the enemies chasing me are nothing but the figments of my own imagination, as Rabbi Nachman describes so often. And so when it comes to tshuva, when it comes to believing in ourselves, when it comes to hearing the Torah that speaks to our heart, yet nevertheless leaves us with a sense that this can't be true because it goes against everything I've assumed about myself, and this can't be true because what's going to happen when I let myself go, etc., etc., we have to learn to believe steadfastly in the radical teachings of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, of Rabbi Nachman, of Rav Yitzchak Maya Morgenstern, of all of the tzaddikim that give us the power that we know is true, which is that I can change everything in a moment, and the only thing blocking me is my lack of belief within myself. And what a person has to come to, what a person has to cultivate within their mind, is that they have to hear those voices in their mind that say, you can't, you can't, you can't, to look at them. And instead of trying to convince those voices that I can, I can, I can, or to engage with them in a dialogue where I've already lost, because it's no seintan lifgam, when I enter into the territory of my cognitive distortions, which have been functioning far longer than my healthy thinking has been functioning, even if I feel that I'm coming at them with a strong argument, nevertheless, those negative thoughts and those self-defeating thoughts and assumptions about myself are going to have their way with me. And so engaging with them one-on-one is not the mahalach. The mahalach is not caring about them, ignoring them completely, ki'ilu mevutlim ke'afer da'ara, as if they were nothing but the dust of the earth. They don't mean anything other than the emergence of a particular thought in the mind that will dissipate as quickly as it arose. Our problem very often is that any thought that emerges in the mind, especially one that is self-defeating and allows me to rest assuredly in my pattern of self-destructive behavior, scriptures, I will take as halacha l'moisha misinai. I will take as if it is written in stone. But in truth, they are not real. Simply because the thoughts feel real, simply because the narrative structures feel real, doesn't make them any more real. And we have to learn how to be koifer in our own thoughts. We have to be koifer in the negative thoughts. We have to be koifer in the malshinim that exist within us and the parts of myself that are denying the other parts of myself from entering into change. And it's no one other than Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman, Zchus Yogen Aleinu, who teaches us this light of not caring, because Rabbi Nachman says explicitly that until I come to a place of realizing that I am the only person in existence, this world is mine. I am the one who determines for myself my capacity to move forward or to move backwards. It's not some other person's opinion. It's not some perceived opinion of the other person. And here's an important piece. If we're saying that all of the perceptions that keep me stuck are on my own, what about all the other people who are keeping me stuck and all the other people who are telling me that, no, that's just chassidus. That's not the real mahalach of tshuva. Tshuva is not that easy. Tshuva is still about punishing yourself, and the Baal Shem Tov was this, and Rabbi Nachman was this, and that's just for those chevra who are interested in neo-chassidus, etc., chas v'shalom. How do I speak against no malshinim? How can I align the fact that there are malshinim outside of me who diminish and belittle my avoida, but at the same point, I'm trying to come to the place to realize that the malshinim are the ones in my own heart and own mind. And the way to be misyashiv this is very much based on Rabbi Nachman in Torah Hey, as well as in the Torah in between Chelek Aleph and Chelek Sheni, which is Echad Haya Avram, that it's very simple, as they say in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, lahavdil, that there are three ways of looking at a given situation. There's how I see the situation, how the other person sees the situation, and how I assume the other person sees the situation. And for an individual in the process of tshuva, very often the only one that's going to have any semblance of a difference is going to be the third category, which is how I assume the other person is thinking. Because if I think the other person is thinking something about me, memela, that becomes the ultimate truth in my mind. So those malshinim are also just the malshinim internally, which we have to overcome. These voices that tell us that I need to care about kind of the optics of what tshuva looks like, instead of realizing that tshuva simply means the radical belief that no matter where I find myself, no matter what has happened, no matter what will happen, I am never more than one moment's flick of the eye away from being mekusher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'tachlis hakesher. As Rabbi Nachman said, that ultimately I have to come to a place of understanding that I can engage in the biggest chait in the entire world. I could fall to places that are beyond my comprehension of failure, but in the very next moment, I can believe that I can be as mekusher to the Ribbono Shel Olam as I was a moment before the fall. If a yid thinks or assumes that there is anything in this world that blocks me from directly connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam in the next moment, then we have not properly understood the secrets of yichud and the secrets of tshuva. And a person has to cultivate a perspective of lo ichbatiyut. I don't care. I don't care the looks that they're giving me. I don't care the claims that they apply to me. I don't care the statements that they offer to me. I don't care what my thoughts are telling me. I don't care about anything that anybody says if it brings me farther from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't care. I am going to continue to do my avoida. Lo yichbatli. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. Let them talk. Let my mind talk. Let my thoughts talk. I have one singular task in front of me, which is to go weiter and to move forward. Rabbi Nachman says as follows in Torah Kuf Nun Hey in the 155th Torah. Ki erech apayim hu tali b'bechinas emuna. Patience with myself, not getting angry at myself, an allowance to give to myself to believe that I can move forward ever so slightly. That is dependent on a true faith. Ki kol zman sheyesh avoy dezar ba'olam. Anytime that there is anything foreign from God in this world, as charon af ba'olam, then I am going to have a reason to be angry. If there is something in my life, a person, a thought, an emotion that I conceive or perceive as being outside the purview of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending to me at every single moment, then I'm going to open myself up to the tendency of anger, because then the emotion or the thought might be seen as something other than a message from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Aval al yedei emuna, but through emuna, which sees everything, emotions, thoughts, negative feelings, all part and parcel of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing, shuhepech avodah zarah, which is the opposite of avodah zarah, nispata l'charon af. Then I can negate the charon af, because there's nothing to get upset about. If there's something that detracts me from the Ribbono Shel Olam, obviously it's a trick, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one sending me that thought, and it can't be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is directing me to be distant from him. So memela, any thought that causes me to feel distant, my job then is to ignore it and move forward. The zoichim la'arichas apayim. And through this, we learn how to breathe deeply, we learn how to not rush, we learn how to be patient, we learn how how to trust that there's nothing that can knock me off my game, because that patience is the hepech of charonaf. It's the opposite of anger. The extension and the expansion of my amuna to come to recognize that every thought, even the malshinim dika thoughts in my mind, are all messages from the Rabbeinu Shleilim. Memela, if it's a message from the Rabbeinu Shleilim that's telling me to distance myself from the Rabbeinu Shleilim, then I don't have to care. I don't have to listen to it, because kol masha balabayis omer, that a person has to listen to anything the balabayis says, except for tzei, except for go out. Meaning, if there's a thought that's telling me that I'm not close to the Rabbeinu Shleilim, but it's a thought coming from the Rabbeinu Shleilim, then I can give myself the patience and the allowance to not pay attention to it. Because if I don't have the emuna, and that arichas af, then any davar habilbulu maniyah sha'over alav v'tvilaso v'avodaso, I'm not going to be able to handle. But if I develop aricha sapayim, if I develop patience based on the awareness that every thought that emerges into my mind, every naysaying thought is simply a message from the Rabbeinu Shleilim for me to learn how to not pay attention to those negative thoughts, then I will uncover the possibility of being marich apo, of cultivating patience. I'll call davar bilbul with regards to anything that comes to confuse me, umani, or anything that comes to prevent me. Sha'over alav b'tfilas b'avodaso. Any thought that tells me in the middle of my davening that I'm not roi, any thought that tells me in the middle of my tshuva that I'm not roi, I'll be able to be soivel it. I'll be soivel hakol. Nothing is going to be too much for me, because what do I care? I don't care about this thoughts. V'lo yit yatze, v'lo yit atzelai desaklal, and I'm not going to allow myself to become sad or disheartened and lazy or procrastinating as a result of these negative feelings. Why? Rak ya'atzor rucho, I'll be able to hold my breath. I'll be able to pay attention. V'lo yichbat leklal, and to enter into a place where I just don't care. I just don't care. I don't care what this negative thought is telling me. I don't care what the voice of this malshin is telling me, because I have the koyach of keser that allows me to see how every thought that tells me to stay away from the Rabbeinu Shleilim is just an opportunity for me to learn to ignore a thought like that, because that thought is coming from the Rabbeinu Shleilim. And at that point, lo yachush es kol habilbulim v'amenios, the person is not going to feel any of the bilbulim or any of the menios, and a person is going to continue in their avoida. And this is very much makusha to the avoida of tshuva b'simcha that we've been discussing. Because if I allow myself to be overcome by anything that goes wrong or any struggle that takes place or any malshin dika thought that comes into my mind to tell me I'm worthless or I'm incapable, I'm simply going to be able to learn the art of not caring. And nobody better than Rabbi Nachman describes this process, and there's no place better than a specific story, I believe, to convey this secret, what Rabbi Nachman was going to say. And I'm going to read the story in the Hebrew, and Be'ezer Hashem, with the translation, we'll get a picture of what Rabbeinu is talking about. So this is a mashal. This is not in the Sipur Maisios Mishanim Kanmonios, but it's a fundamental maisa that really sheds light on this or of lo echpatiyut, this light of not caring at all, not caring what they say, not caring what I feel, just caring about the path right in front of me, which is my ability to come close to the Rabbeinu Shleilim, and ignoring all of the thoughts that tell me that I can't move forward. Siper Rabbeinu Zal. Rabbeinu Zal told the story, Maise ba'ani echa, there was a tale with one impoverished individual, Shahaya mitparnes betit, that he made his money out of dealing with cement and mud and cleaning through the cement and mud. Shahaya chayfer tit v'maichram, he would collect cement and mud and he would sell it. Pamachas, there was once upon a time when he was digging and he found suddenly a beautiful diamond, and he understood that the value of this diamond is a profoundly valuable thing, but he didn't know the cost of it. The halach l'seicher, and he went to a diamond seller for the diamond seller to tell them what the cost was. The diamond seller says, in this country, in this town, there's nobody who's able to pay the amount that this diamond is worth, because it's worth a profound amount. And in order to find a buyer, you have to go to the town of London. Now, again, London over here could very possibly be a hint that Rabbi Nachman was giving to the secret of a tzaddik who would come from London, Rav Yitzchak Meyer Morgenstern Shlita. V'tzarech lisa avor mechirasa l'London, you have to go to London to sell it, to the town of kingship. But this individual was impoverished and he didn't have enough money to pay for the trip. And therefore, what he did is he went and he sold all of his possessions, the minimal possessions that he had, and he went from house to house to collect charitable funds in order to give him enough money to buy a ticket on a ship that would take him to London to sell this diamond. And he wanted to ascend on top of the ship, but he didn't have enough money. And what did he do? He went to the captain. He went to find the captain, the strangest he could find. And he put his proposition on the line. Then he showed him the diamond. Then he explained exactly what the situation was. The captain saw this diamond. He understood, wow, this must be a very wealthy person who was coming onto my ship. And he brought him with open arms and an open heart onto the ship. And he gave him a first class seat like a gvir. And he put him on the first level. And he set up all of the arrangements and the ta'anugim as if this individual who had this diamond was amongst the rich. Vihine b'chadro, and in the room of this impoverished individual, who the captain of the ship assumes is a rich man, there was a window that was open to the sea, to look out onto the sea that is going to bring you to the town of London. V'darcho hayatamid l'sameach nafsho v'margalis b'prat b'esa achila shayem ishtasheya imo. And it was the path of this Jew to spend time looking at this diamond, specifically in the time of eating, for the sake of cultivating his digestive tract as a result of simcha, right? Very mindful practices of breathing deep and eating calmly and bringing joy into the process of eating and satiation. And in a moment of the openness of heart and eating, he would stare and he would look at this diamond. But there was once upon a time where he fell asleep in the middle of looking at this diamond. And he left the diamond on the table in front of him, near Dam Merovayefo. In the middle, when this person had fallen asleep, there was a Masharis, a servant, who had come along and cleaned off the tablecloth, including the diamond that was on top of it. This worker had no idea that there was this valuable stone, and he threw everything into the sea. When this Jew woke up and he understood what had happened, Hayaloitsar Gadol, he was in an immense amount of pain, ukimat shayatsamidaiso. And he almost lost his mind. Kimaya sa'ata, what am I supposed to do now? Hare Captain Ugazlan. This captain is a thief. And he's going to kill me as a result of my inability to pay for the fares because he thought I had this diamond. Al Kane, what did this Jew do? Asa es atzmo sameach ke'ilu lo eira davar. He made himself happy as if absolutely nothing had happened. He completely ignored the negative reality. He completely ignored the fact that he was hopeless at this point. He completely ignored all of the malshinus that his mind was bringing to him. He completely ignored the yeyush-inducing moment of recognition of, oh my gosh, this is shver. He ignored it completely as if nothing had happened, and he made himself happy. He pretended to be happy. He convinced himself to be happy, and he acted happy. Being a captain, the captain would come each day to this imagined rich man's cabin to speak with him. And one day the captain came and he could not tell a single ounce of difference. This person made himself happy. To the extent that he saw absolutely no difference. And the captain says to him, you know what? I see that you are an incredibly wise and rich man. And I want you to hear out my request. I want to buy a large amount of grain when we come to London in order to sell it. But they're not going to trust that I'm the one who earned the money to buy that wheat because they'll claim that I stole the money from the other passengers. So what I want to do is I want to give you the money, you buy the wheat payment, and then with the increase of funds, you'll give me that money and I'll give you a little bit of a fee. And so it was mutav in the eyes of this Jew who was simply going along with the process that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving to him. The Asu came and they did it. And when they arrived in London, the captain died. And all of the money remained in the hands of the ani, and the value of the money was far more than the value than the diamond would have ever been. This simple story, this powerful story, this remarkable story of lo ichbatiyut, of not caring. If I were to care in that matziv, I would have fallen into yeyush, into despondency. I would have listened to all of the various logical reasons to not believe in my capacity to have ashiras and to arrive in London. But it's only through the radical art of lo yichbat leklal, of not caring, of being oymed b'fnei anisayon, and saying, Rabbeinu Shalom, it is just me and you. I am not going to listen to the negative thought patterns. I am not going to listen to those helplessness-inducing patterns that I've convinced myself are true about me. And I'm going to break free. I'm going to break free and think differently about myself with the capacity to change my mind, the possibility of seeing myself in a way that I haven't seen myself before, with the power and the courage to ignore the negative thoughts. In the path of tshuva, there will be so many thoughts that tell us we can't do tshuva. So many thoughts that say, ah, your tshuva was real, then why are you doing this now? Clearly, it reveals that every every ounce of tshuva you did over the last 36 hours is nothing, because here you are now engaging in a different behavior. But that's not true. Every ounce and every moment of tshuva is written in eternity. Every ounce of kedusha and hiskarvus to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is written in the irreducible traces of existence. Nothing goes away. Every ounce of positive movement, thought, feeling, action, intuition, intimation, desire, every ounce of it gets written in the Sefer HaChaim. It is the Sefer HaChaim. And even if I fall the next moment, it does absolutely nothing to diminish the value of my experience. Ad shelo yichbat leklal. I am not a person of cheshbon. I have to be meshuga, like we spoke about when it comes to tshuva. I have to dance like a meshugana, like Rabbi Nachman taught us, of Sreik Pinu L'Shanein Arena, which is Rosh Tevo's shofar, because I have to let go of my seichel. I have to throw my seichel away. I have to run unabashedly into the unreasonable belief in myself that no matter what my mind is telling me, no matter what I assume the other person is saying about me, it doesn't make a difference. All I need to do is what I need to do. All I need to do is move ever so slightly forward, and memelo yispardu kol paleyaven. Everything else is going to move along with me. There's reasonable things that I have to listen to. There's constructive criticism. Avada, avada. That's not what we're discussing right now. We're discussing the malshinistic thoughts, those thoughts that tell me that I'm worthless. And we can assume safely any thought that tells me that I can't do tshuva is a kfira dika thought. It's a kfira to the Pnimiyas HaTorah. It's a kfira to the Or the Baal Shem Tov and to Rabbeinu HaArizal and to the Rashbi and to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Rabbi Nachman and all of the tzaddikim. And it's a kfira to ourselves. A person has to be koifer in the kfira within themselves. A person has to deny the self-denying thoughts, and a person has to realize that I'm the one who has to overcome that malshinus. I'm the one who has to continuously believe unreasonably in my capacity to move ever so slightly forward in this world and to be the apple of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's eyes. Nagi bordor sheyichud chay kevavat shamrim. Rabbeinu Shel Olam, guard those who seek your unity like the apple of your eye. We all seek the unity of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and we have to learn to see ourselves as the apple of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's eye, as the Rambam paskins the halacha that a fundamental expression of tshuva is to see that each and every action of my life is going to be the tipping point of what reality is going to be. That there has never been a chiddush like me. That chiddush kamoni lo haya me'olam. And ani nahar ha-metaher mikol ha-ktamim. I am the purifying stream that purifies all things, and I am the novelty that has never been. That, what Rabbi Nachman says, is true for each and every one of us, because we have to see ourselves that way. If we don't, we've already lost, and we have to continuously be brazen in our loich batiyut, in our deep, uncaring position in the face of any thought that comes to take me away from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and an unreasonable demand to feel good about myself and to say yes to the world and to find another Nekuda Tova and another Nekuda Tova and another Nekuda Tova until I can be mishapech that aura of lo echpatiyut, of not caring, into a deep care that exists between me and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and me and myself and me and the world, Be'ezras Hashem.
The music is by Zusha. For more from the Sheffa Podcast Network, visit our Facebook page and please subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts.